Welcome to Retro Rewind, Now Central's new sports-themed podcast that tells the stories of former Pinal County athletes and memorable events in local sports history. I am your host, Brian Wright, and I am joined by my co-host, Maria Vasquez. Our podcast is brought to you by Crossroads Auto Center, Pinal County's best used car dealer for the last 25 years. Welcome to another episode of Retro Rewind, and our guest this week is the local legend, Lynn Larson, and I should say that not just a local legend, but certainly a legend in all of women's college basketball. And before we get started, I just want to read off a few notes here about Lynn's career at Central Arizona College. So we have three national championships. We have 971 wins to just 145 losses, 29 ACC-AC titles, 35 All-Americans, 10 national tournaments in a row, winning percentage of 87%. And those are just a few of the outstanding achievements in Lynn's career. So, Lynn, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And instead of starting chronologically at the beginning, I want to start at the end of your run at CAC. So, you know, you had been there for, I believe, over 30 years. And when did you make the decision to retire from coaching, and why was it the right time?
Well, actually, I was there 37 years, but we kept track of everything. Women's sports wasn't even logged in. But we kept track of everything for 34 years. 2008 was, that was my last year, and that was an infamous year. I had 10 freshmen, and we went 35-1. And the last game, it was the only one we lost. But 2008, it was my last year.
And how did you kind of come to that decision? I mean, had you been considering it for a while? Was it something that came a little more suddenly?
Well, I was always joking around. Well, this should be my last year. Should be my last year. I don't know. It just, I never saw the end of the tunnel. I just, you know, who knows? I may still be out there. Everybody said, well, go for 1,000 wins. I go, well, you want that on my tombstone, 1,000 wins? I mean, you know, what is that? That's not what people remember you for. I was getting tired. So, and then that group next year, the 10 freshmen, they won it all. And of course, they all called me, and that was it.
Now, because this is something you love so much and you had done so long, was it difficult to step away even though you were tired?
Oh, yeah. It was my life. I mean, I taught 3 to 4 classes a day. The only time I left the gym was to go up and get the mail and fraternize with the local people, and it was a routine. It was my life. Just prepared every practice every morning before I went out there. The kids got so adept at looking at what we were doing that day. It was tough. Especially when it was all over. I'd look at the clock and go, I should be in class at 9. We practice every day at 3. I should be on the floor at 3. It was tough.
After you had made that decision and you had walked away, did you feel like it was the right time? Were you comfortable with that?
Well, you never know. You just, you never know, you know. I've been involved in other things, too. I've helped Mesa Community College and Phoenix College, which has my ex-player, Christy Kincaid, coaching. Mesa's kind of a funny story. Corey up there, that's Division II in this league. There's Division I and Division II. She just let me go to work. And so I got my thrills of coaching back, and they won the national title, Division II. And, of course, they all sent me the ball and all that stuff. So, I don't know. I'm easing out of it. I don't like what I see on TV today. It's just one-on-one and spread the floor. If you spread it any further, they'll be in the locker room. but it's just not the same.
Now, women's sports certainly have come a long way, both in their recognition and in, yes, I think, you know, the level of play. Certainly when you began, it was a much different landscape. Talk about how women's sports, what the landscape of women's sports was when you began coaching.
Well, when I arrived on campus, I saw my office. It had a box of locks. And I was hired, and they said, you will coach three sports along with your teaching. And it was volleyball, basketball, softball. Of course, we had no money. So recruiting was, actually, my first volleyball team was pretty much Spanish. I'm from Iowa. I didn't even know what a taco was. And they would get in the huddle and yell Spanish cheers. I had no clue, but that was volleyball. And then we didn't have the elite, you know, like you play this, you play that. We just all kind of rolled into all the sports together. Just one uniform, never had to turn it in. So it was completely different. Completely. I don't even know. When we did get some recruiting money, or I think it was $500 for the year, which doesn't go far.
All right, so what was that like for you, coming in and having to coach three different sports?
You know, first of all, in Iowa, you don't play volleyball. You don't. You play basketball and softball. So I went to a lot of volleyball camps. I didn't know a 5-1 from a 4-2 to whatever. And I actually took the team to California. We did good. The only team we ever lost to was Mesa. They were national champions a lot. But I was pretty good at hitting the overhead smashes at them and all that. And I don't know. I just, you know, volleyball's done. Then you just roll into the next one. As a matter of fact, back then, I still hear from somebody in softball. We were third at what they called the World Series in 1975. Tanya Adrian was a fantastic pitcher. In fact, she still emails me. And, I mean, that's an amazing story. For someone that still emails you after 1975. But we were third in the World Series that year. But there was a time the seasons would overlap. So I said, this is not a good idea. I think I should stick with basketball and softball because volleyball was overlapping, you know, into basketball. It wasn't good. So it was tough, but, you know, I just got on the treadmill and kept going.
Now, can you talk a little about how you first came to Arizona? Because you were born and raised in Iowa,
right.
Grew up on a farm.
Right.
So what initially brought you out to Arizona?
Well, I played basketball at Dana College for 2 years. And then my fiancé was at Iowa State University. So I transferred there to Iowa State University. And he graduated, and then I graduated. And I got a teaching job at Blue Island, Illinois. And then somebody there said, you need to go to Rich East High School, which was one of the top 10. So I went over to Rich East High School in Park Forest, Illinois, and taught there for 4 years. And then, of course, my fiancé, I had 2 engagement rings, and I said, you know, I think there's more to life out there for me. So traveled to Arizona, I think it was the summer of 69. Wow, walked the Grand Canyon, took me 3 days to recover, and I was in shape then. Walked over Arizona State University campus, I was in awe of it. So I applied to be a grad assistant. And I think there were 7 of us. And our stipend for the year was $1,500. You had to teach 2 classes, and you had to go to class Monday through Thursday nights. For 3 hours a night. So, busy, busy, busy. But I got my master's degree, wrote a 99-page thesis, taught classes, and then somebody said there's a job opening in Coolidge. Well, where's Coolidge? And I had a Ford Fairlane with no air. And so I thought, well, I'll just go down and check it out. And I remember coming in the back way. I didn't know where I was. Dirt flying. And then arrived on campus. And he showed me around. And I was hired. I mean, that campus opened up in 1969.
So this is brand new.
Well, 69 it opened up.
And then you, what year was it when you
71.
Was, okay, a couple
but,
of years later.
But here's the story. They fired the whole PE department, except for Tim Edwards. So they were looking for someone. But there were two women. So I guess I replaced two. And I got hired. I can't even remember my first salary. I kept track of everything. I can go look it up. It was probably something like $7,200 or something for teaching and coaching. So,
did you immediately accept, or was it a difficult decision for you?
You know, no, it really wasn't. This was July and very hot, which meant, gosh, I got to go home, get my stuff, get back here. And looking for a place to stay, there was nothing back then in Casa Grande. Nothing in 71. I drove up and down looking. And I guess I ended up in Arizona City. Of course, I've moved three times there. I've had a house built in 04, but I still live in Arizona City. So, I don't know. Back then, you know, I don't think you realize the struggle or the demands, what you set your mind to at times. You just do it. And then even in basketball season, there is no downtime. Don't kid me. In the summer, you order, you recruit, you schedule, you check on their financial aid. There is no downtime. And the funniest thing is bringing these kids in from all over the world in August. This is a cute story. We still, I'm on Facebook, so I stay in touch with these kids. But Tina flew in from Denmark. Of course, my heritage is Danish. That's why it's L-A-U-R-S-E-N. My parents came over on a boat, and I was the last of the nine children, but I never learned to speak Danish. But Tina came off the plane and said, "Coach, did you turn the heat on?" This is August. I go, "No, Tina, this is the way it is. It's just, can you imagine?"
The heat's always on.
Oh, my goodness. It's, here they come from a different country. So, yeah. Those are cute stories.
You know, you mentioned when you first started, there was a lot of Hispanic players, Spanish speakers, and of course, throughout your career, you know, you coached a lot of black players, a lot of European players, different languages, different cultures, different countries. Now, coming from rural Iowa, was it ever a challenge to coach players from so many different backgrounds?
Well, you know, I guess I made light of it. I would mock their accents. I had two from Belarus, Russia, which right now is going through turmoil. Anna Statsenka was 6'5". Ludmila Nichpochik was a point guard. So Terry Billingsley is driving me to the airport, and I'm studying Russian. Actually, back then, I would call Division I's, and they would say, "Lenya, recruit these two." So I got off the plane, and there they are. And I said, "Как дела?" Which is hello in Russian. And they laughed at me. Everything was, I would roll every day with their accents. Just, you know, Lud, and I'd always give kids nicknames. Because if you have a three-syllable name, like Ludmilla, we'd have already scored. I mean, you could see our offensive average was off the chart. So they all had nicknames. You know, well, I just shortened hers to Lode. And, you know, they came here speaking no English, graduated, went on to Radford University. Anna has two children, still on Facebook. It's just amazing how we stay in touch, you know, with all of them. But I'd always roll with the accents, you know, just have fun with them. And they thought that was... I learned a little bit of Spanish, you know, like pelota, ball, and andale, hurry up and get down the floor. Stuff like that. But yeah, you're right. I never, in Iowa, it's bread, meat, and potatoes. That's just the way you're brought up.
But you seem to acclimate to all these different kinds of people fairly easily.
I think it was my sense of humor. Or they, I don't know, I guess they liked me or believed in me or something, you know. My two from Nigeria, that's another interesting story. The main man right now of Toronto, I forget his name, Masai. He's the main man for the Toronto Raptors. He called me early in my career and said, we have some great female players over here in Nigeria. Yeah, I ought to go hit him up. He's loaded now. But that's how I got to meet Rashida Sadiq. And you have no idea in Lagos, Nigeria, what you go through to get over here. You pay $100. They listen to you. And if they say you can go, or they say, no, you can't go. So, Rashida and I would talk. You can't believe talking from here to Lagos, Nigeria. The interference. Anyway, every once in a while you'd get through. And she called me and said, Coach, I'm on an airplane. I went, you are? And then she called again and said, Coach, I'm in New York. Come get me. I said, I'm not driving to New York. You're going to have to fly down here. So, of course, she was all American, and UConn recruited her. She ended up at Oklahoma State. I want to talk more about Oklahoma State also in this interview. And then behind her came Aisha Mohammed, and she's still playing for the Nigerian national team. Still on Facebook, all of them. It's just amazing stories.
Well, so Oklahoma State, you mentioned it. You had a couple of...
Well, let's back up. I had a player named Miranda Serna. Played for me 1 year, my point guard, and then went over and I think she played or helped Trinity Valley, who was very tough back in the JUCO days, Trinity Valley Community College, whose coach was Kurt Budke. Well, we played them in the national tournament and beat them. I have no idea how, but we did. Anyway, Miranda followed Kurt Budke. He was the head coach at Oklahoma State, and she was now the assistant. So she'd always come back. I actually sent 5 players to Oklahoma State. 5. And those were the years they were very good. And the sad part about all that, I think it was 7 years ago, Miranda and Kurt took off with an older couple to go recruit. And the plane crashed. And I still have the number 4 right on my computer. And you know, just before that happened, she was ready to seek a new life. She wanted to be a head coach. She wanted to coach at Long Beach State and wanted me to come be her assistant slash mentor. Now, that would have been a big decision for me. But
What year was this?
I think it was 7 years ago. So that would be, what, 2013? Yeah, I think there's a There's a chapter in my book. By the way, I wrote a book, From Buckboard to Backboard, which is my whole life story out there. And a lot of good chapters, but there's a chapter in there of just those two, the Oklahoma State head coaches. But she was like my daughter. She just, I still have that letter four on my computer. The four of them died in a small plane crash. But I sent five athletes to Oklahoma State.
So what was it about CAC? Because early on you had opportunities to leave and go coach somewhere else.
Yeah, what was it about CAC? You're exactly right. Everybody, I said, you're out in the middle of nowhere. In fact, Maria, I'd pick up a recruit and we'd pull off Elliott Road. I'd pull in a McDonald's so they had something to do while I'm driving. I don't care if they got mustard on the car. And I'd say, oh, that's a sororal. That's our state flower. And we'd talk and we'd talk and we'd talk. But they'd get there and like, in fact, Rashida, going back to Rashida, we didn't arrive till evening. You can't even see the campus. They don't even know where they are. But you're right. My one big moving on adventure was UC Santa Barbara. Now, who wouldn't want to go to UC Santa Barbara? The wealthiest county in California. So they flew me over and was picked up and walked around the camp. Well, actually, I flew over the part of the ocean to UC Santa Barbara. And I don't like to fly. I think I'm Amelia Earhart coming around again. In fact, my brother was the main man with Transworld Airlines, so every time there's a plane crash, I'd say, well, all right, what brought this one down? But anyway, I'm on campus, walking around, and we have a little interview. You know, like, and my question was, how much do you have in your budget? Very low. And they'd go, well, we want somebody in here to get us a shoe contract. This is my exact quote. With a record like that, you couldn't get shoes from Kmart. Now, I know that wasn't the reason, but I left there and I go, this is not me. Oh, add to that. That night, they put me up at the Red Lion, right on the beach. And I'm working out there in my robe. Garbage ladies, picking garbage up out of the cans. And I'm an Iowa farm girl. I mean, this was not me. So I stayed at CAC. And everybody always asked that, why didn't you leave? Why didn't you leave? I never liked change. Even at my age, I don't like change. I mean, I would, at my age right now, I mean, just be able to breathe and stay alive is great. I don't care for change. But that was an interesting recruiting experience.
So you had the experience at UC Santa Barbara, which didn't, for whatever reason, quite feel the right fit.
No.
Just hypothetically, what if a program such as an Arizona or an Arizona State had maybe come calling? Because I have a feeling that that would have felt a little more familiar to you. But I don't know. Would that have changed your mind, do you think?
It may have. I looking back, I don't know. I mean, I know both coaches, and I know the softball coach at U of A, Mike Kendrea. He was a CAC boy, and I don't know. That's a good question. But I guess in hindsight, you have no sight. You just keep going.
So you don't have any regrets of spending your 30-plus years at CAC and never moving on?
No. And it wasn't about the money. I was paid to teach. And coaching was a side stipend. And you saw that in the book. I kept everything. So my last year of coaching, I made $7,000. Somebody looked at that and said, a month? I said, no, the year. It progressively got better. It was like 500 and then 1,000 or whatever. But I was never in it for the income, but the outcome. I mean, you know, I have two cars. One is 20 years old and the other one's 34 years old. You know, I can go buy a new Mercedes. I've just never, maybe being brought up as a farm girl, you had to be very frugal with your life. And don't get me wrong, I like nice things. I dress to the 10. In fact, I'd get so paranoid about it, I'd plan the night before what I was going to wear, because it had to be perfect. The right color, matching shoes, and that's just the way I am today. It's just the way I am today.
Do you think part of why you felt comfortable at CAC, because you mentioned not really liking change, but do you think part of it too was that in a way it reminded you a little bit of your upbringing in rural Iowa because it wasn't, you know, big city, it was a little more isolated?
Actually, it was a family, the professors. I had a English teacher come to my yoga or fitness class, and she'd say, oh, somebody wasn't in class today. Now, don't be too hard on her. Man, they never want to see me coming. I'd chase them down in that golf cart if I had to. That's how strict I was. They went to study hall Monday, Tuesday, Thursday nights. And they knew they couldn't get away with anything. They go, she's got the campus. She's got videos all over. You can't do anything. But it was a family. I mean, the crowds would come. I taught a golf class for snowbirds. Snowbird golf. And we'd talk about basketball for a half hour. Because they'd all come to the games. And the faculty would come. Just, it was a family affair. And being out here in Iowa, you know, my parents passed away in 72 and 75. I have a sister and brother still alive in Iowa, but of the nine, there's only three of us left. So that was important to me.
Tim.
You bet. And that's what they were.
You talked a little bit about your strict nature and how you, I guess both whether you were teaching or coaching. And I wonder, who was the person who most influenced, do you believe, your teaching and coaching style, personality?
Well, I didn't have a ton of coaches. In Iowa, I had Coach Bill Ferdin. He was a taskmaster. At Dana College, I had Pete Peterson for 2 years. When I transferred to Iowa State, they didn't even have intercollegiate sports. None. So I never got anything done there. So, you know, that's a tough question. I mean, some of it's internal. Maybe some of the stuff I've watched, the old Bobby Knight shows. And I don't know. Just, I did what I felt was right. Just, You can't bargain with kids today. And now at my age, I don't know if I could even put up with some of their, you know, I used to have a rule, they'd come in, I had said, if I hear one cell phone go off, you're all running 5 miles. And they listened to me. I mean, that was it. You know, here I am 5'5", and they said, look at Anna's 6'5". I always said, sit down or I'll bite your knee. Because I wanted players to be taller than me, you know? But now they respected me.
Did any of your kind of firm, strict personality come from your parents?
No, I don't. Well, yeah. My brother was 8, the youngest brother, when I arrived. And the brothers are off fighting in wars and stuff. And they're like, what are you two doing? You know, so in fact, my brother asked my dad, where's mom going? She's going to go have a baby. So here I am born December 12th, 12th month, 12th day. And I don't know, I just kind of grew up with a tremendous imagination, because here you are on a farm, and what can you do? I mean, yeah, you went to school, and they'd pull on my pigtails, and which I had to take care of that, too. I remember, I think it was something stick in your mind. It might have been kindergarten. We had two girls in that kindergarten class that picked on another girl who had cross-eyed. Back then, you had no cure when your eyes were crossed. Well, I had to go clean their clock, because that just upset me. But I don't know, you know, where I got my strict... I just tried to be myself, and I think it proved beneficial.
All right, well, that's going to bring us to the end of our first episode here with Lynn Larson. We are going to have a part two that you can listen to next week. And we'll be back talking more with Lynn Larson. Thanks for listening to Pinal Central's Retro Rewind podcast, brought to you by Crossroads Auto Center, Pinal County's best used car dealer for the last 25 years. Remember to go to PinalCentral.com and our Facebook page to access future podcasts, as we will have new episodes every Wednesday. We will catch you next time.